97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Oh, yeah. This is the song that I warmed my voice up with this morning, actually. You know that?
Is it really? Not Barry White? I was just thinking you were a Barry White kind of guy.
He can't.
No, it was this one. Chris Stapleton there, man. Good choice, Carl. Good job, buddy.
What's the name of that song? Tennessee Whiskey?
Yes.
Imagine that.
Yeah.
We'll talk about it.
And it's an iconic song that everybody enjoys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But until you hear David Allan Coe or George Jones do it, do you really understand how much Stapleton changed it? I mean, it's so good.
Well,
good.
I'll talk more about it coming up here in just a couple minutes. Welcome into the show, everyone. And I will be in Memphis drinking some Tennessee whiskey this weekend. Bo Matthews.
And what song, what show is this?
How about that?
What show is this called?
I'm sorry, it's not the mash. No, it's not. No, it's the Great Outdoors. I may be outdoors. It's going to be in the 60s down there, and it'll be colder.
Snowing up here, yeah.
Yeah, no kidding. But I am traveling down there. I'll give you more details on that in a couple of minutes. You know, one of the big stories I think we probably need to talk about this week is, of course, what happened at the Super Bowl parade in Kansas City. On Wednesday, what a tragic situation. As more details keep unfolding in this, it didn't take till the end of the day. Like, it happened at what, around noon, maybe 1 o'clock?
It's funny you say that. I was in a meeting and I didn't hear about it for like a couple of hours after it happened.
Right.
Do you know the time that it happened?
Well, the parade started at 11, and this happened about 40 minutes after the stage presentation ended, and the team had already left. They were on their buses headed back to the stadium, and so it happened after the actual parade and everything was over. So it had to be after 1:30 or 2 o'clock. I'm sure this was a 2 or 3 hour process, right? And that's when the shooting broke out. There were still a lot of people there. Put it that way.
Prayers for Kansas City. My goodness. Yeah. You know, it was such a great victory, and so many people around the state and around the country so excited, you know, that for it to end like this is just horrible.
Well, as we record this, we don't know all the details on the shooters. There have been some social media stories flying around about who might be involved here, and if it's true, it's going to be explosive. Let's put it that way. Not from a terrorism perspective, but just in terms of who the individual players might have been in this situation. But the bigger story is the every time this happens, like clockwork, you can take it to the bank, you can set your watch by it. A local politician and a national politician and the White House and the national media will all start the drumbeat: gun bad, gun control. That's immediately
right.
Where they go to, even though the issue at stake here is criminality. That's always the issue. And it irritates me when people who don't know their rear end from a hole in the ground, like Charles Barkley, decide they're going to go on and opine about this. And Carl has got one of the bites queued up that I played on my show this week. So this guy, number one, doesn't think background checks are any good. He thinks it should take more than 15 or 20 minutes, and not just anybody ought to be able to get a gun, because he thinks they're too easy to get, which just means he doesn't know what he's talking about. Then he rolls this one out, Bo. Listen to the analogy that Charles Barkley made to buying a gun.
If a normal person went into, let's say, hypothetically, a Mercedes-Benz dealership, they wouldn't let them say, hey, I'll just take whatever you tell me, I can afford it. They would do a comprehensive background check on a car.
Right, you don't
think we should do that with guns?
Yeah.
We should do it. And I'm not trying to simplify it. I'm not trying to be flippant. But I can't walk in a Mercedes-Benz dealership and say, I'll take the best one you got. They're like, well, we need to see some bank records and what kind of job you got and everything. It should at least be that on guns.
But you know what's...
What?
I'm watching Bo's face as he's listening to that for the first time.
That's not even relevant.
Isn't that the dumbest thing you've ever heard?
And he's a gazillionaire. He could walk in and buy any. Nobody's going to be checking nothing. They're going to be sign on a dotted line right here.
They know who he is.
That analogy doesn't work.
No, it doesn't work. If you walked into a dealership with $100,000 in a bag and said, "I want that $100,000 car over there," all you'd have to do is sign your name on a piece of paper and drive off with it. There's no relevance here. The people that are anti-gunners are anti-gunners. That's all they care about. They don't care about the facts. They don't care about the criminal history of who did it or their intent or any of that. None of it.
The only hiccup in that analogy would be if you walked into a Mercedes-Benz dealership drunk with $100,000, they may not sell it to you then.
They'd sell it to you. They just drive you home in it. That's what they would
yeah,
do.
Exactly.
You know, there's no car salesman in the world that's going to let you get out of there if you walk in with a bag of money. It's just this is what it devolves to. I mean, on CNN, they're arguing over we've got to do something on the Joy Reid show. They had a lady on talking about the SAPA law in Missouri and how they've gone backwards on gun control and they're reducing gun control and it's easy for people in Missouri to get weapons, and none of this addresses the fact that these are criminals who broke the law. They don't care, Bo. They don't care what the laws are, right?
Well, and again, the timing of the recording of this show is Thursday morning. So yes. When you're listening to the show, we may have now already seen mugshots, which we didn't by Thursday morning. We don't have any details on who they are, where they're from, or whatever. But this is, this is something, like you said, the drum beats. Let's get the guns. Round them up. People are getting hurt.
You know why we're doing this on Thursday morning? Because Thursday afternoon, Mark Cox is headed to Tennessee to have some whiskey.
Headed down
to drink with Elvis.
So some good friends of mine I work with on my show are some great supporters of the show is Lore Wine and Spirits. And they have a relationship with Old Dominic Distillery down in Memphis. Fantastic. Ooh. They make some great bourbon called Hewling Station. It's a square-looking bottle. If you haven't tried it yet, you need to get some. They've also put out a Tennessee whiskey that is a very different take on the Tennessee whiskeys you're probably used to. It's delicious. They've invited us down to come and tour the distillery and do some samples. I'm going to do an interview with the master distiller. Their master distiller is one of the few female master distillers in the business. Her name is Alex Castle. And she claims that a woman's palate when it comes to drinking bourbon and whiskey is very different than a man's. And she credits that to what she's doing there at Old Dominic.
Wow, that's pretty impressive. So are you going to identify as a woman then when you're down there?
I don't think it's any of your business, Bo. No. Besides sampling plenty of good bourbon and whiskey, we're going to get a chance to go see an NBA game. I've been to 3 NBA games in my life. Michael Jordan back in the late 80s.
Lucky.
In Detroit, I saw him playing a game in Detroit against Bill Laimbeer and the Pistons. I watched a game in Orlando a couple years ago with my son. Gosh, probably been 10 years actually now. And now I'm going to go see the Memphis Grizzlies play Milwaukee on tonight,
Thursday night. A good team playing a bad team.
Yeah.
So on this trip, was there a plus one? Could you not have called me?
You know, my son said the same thing. He's like, gosh, Dad. Wasn't there any more room in the car? I'm like,
hello.
Listen, I'm a guest. I've been invited along on this. That's right. I'm just a passenger.
You are the plus one.
Absolutely. Hey,
and will you be doing a podcast for the MASH while you're down there?
I'm going to do a version of the podcast MASH with Alex Castle from Old Dominic while we're there. Talking about some of their new bourbons they've got out and whiskeys. So.
Outstanding. We got a lot for you on the show. Second Amendment Radio on the Great Outdoors. Going to talk the St. Louis RV Travel Show coming up next. Stay right there.
Tennessee whiskey. That's Tennessee whiskey. Tennessee whiskey.
One, two, one, two, three, four. On the road again. Just can't wait to get on the road again.
Boy, ain't that the truth. Second Amendment Radio and the great outdoors. My name is Bo Matthews alongside Mark Cox and Carl Middleman, our executive producer.
Pew, pew.
And we are all excited. You know, it's a great time to go down to America Center to take in the STL RV Travel Show because, you know, current RVers can go in and look for upgrades because they do trade-ins.
Yes,
and,
we can.
Everybody wants to upgrade, right? Secondly, if you're a first-time RV buyer, boy, I'll tell you what, this is the show to go to because you can gather as much information as you can. And so excited. I love going to the show because dreamers, you get to dream. We've got Bradley Eubanks from Bill Thomas Campers in Wentzville. By the way, the only dealer for Airstreams in the St. Louis area. And if you are an Airstream fan, and I know I am, my wife is, this is the guy to talk to. We're going to talk about the whole show plus the coolness of Airstreams and their cool aerodynamic look. Welcome to the show. Bradley, how are you, sir?
I'm doing great today. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, buddy. Are you excited about the show?
Yeah, we are. It's I often refer to it as our Super Bowl. It's right. How we kick off the selling season every year. And it's a great way for people to sort of break into spring fever.
Yeah. So what you're saying is Taylor Swift might arrive at this show. Is it that's a possibility?
You're saying that.
Okay.
You know, Bradley, I think maybe you and I met one time. I actually did some ads on my radio show for Bill Thomas back in 2016, 2017 when I first started on this radio station and loved to come out there and take a tour. And you gravitate to where those Airstreams are. I can just tell you that. That was one of the first places they took me when they took me on a tour of the lot was to show your selection. And I believe there was a time in recent years where, I mean, but your business just exploded during COVID, right?
Yeah, it sure did. It was, it was a benefit to our industry overall for sure. And, but like you were saying, the Airstream tends to be, it's so unique in the industry and it's regarded as, you know, the cream of the crop, classic design and timeless characteristics make it a real draw.
Yeah, there's no
doubt. Is there a benefit to it being the shape that it is as far as aerodynamics, or is it just a tip of the hat to the old RVs of yesterday?
Yes, no, they've done wind tunnel testing and proven better gas mileage through their aerodynamics.
Yeah, I'd say. So, you know, I've got a camper now, and we pull it all over the place. It's one of those that's got the slide out on the side. The perception is that those campers give you more room. But I tell you what, man, you talk about utilizing space. We were camping last year, I believe, somewhere down near the Lake of the Ozarks, and the people next to us were in an Airstream. And they actually invited us in to see the inside of it, and it was impressive.
Yeah, it sure is. You know, the way I often think about it is that these manufacturers make the different models and floor plans to suit different needs. And, you know, just like in a home, people configure them or are drawn to certain configurations based on their lifestyle, the number of people that are in the home or in the case of an RV, the number of people that are camping with them. So it's all about where are you going and what are you doing when you get there. And that's the beauty of the industry is that they make them in so many different configurations to suit the different lifestyles and needs of the public.
Well, the cool thing about the Airstream is that it's an iconic brand, as I mentioned, and you guys are in other classes besides just travel trailers, correct? With that brand?
Yes, we have fifth wheels and travel trailers, and with Airstream we carry their motorized product, the vans. But I should say at the show. Across, you know, the dealers that will be participating in the show bring a little bit of everything.
Yes.
From, you know, we also carry the slide-in truck campers. And so we'll start there, if you will, and then at the show, people can see everything up to and including the big Class A diesel motorhomes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to probably use the wrong terminology here, Bradley, so correct me if I do. But I go past your lot all the time on my way back and forth to Jeff City or Columbia. I've seen would it be a Class A? Is that what they refer to it as, the motorized version of the Airstream?
Well, the Airstream vans are considered a Class B,
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It gets a little confusing, but the terminology doesn't much matter. It really is a matter of getting out and getting in these things, sitting in them to get the look, the feel, touch the thing. And that's the beauty of the show, is you have all these RVs under one roof where you can tour them all and see what strikes your fancy.
So correct me if I'm wrong. Is that a chassis? Is that on a Mercedes chassis?
That is a very common, and yes, that's what Airstream uses primarily. It's
okay.
A very common chassis in the industry. But they, in Airstream's case, they also introduced last year a new model that is on the it's on a Dodge chassis.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
So it's a gas.
Yeah.
It makes it more affordable, but it's still a full functioning RV.
Is it just I don't know. Is it kind of known that Airstreams hold their value better than some of the other brands, which all the brands are fantastic that are going to be featured at the show, but do Airstreams hold their value better?
They really do. And that's proven by the data over time. One of the things that is truly, well, one of the other things that's truly unique about an Airstream is it is considered a generational product. And what we mean by that is if a person just does basic care and maintenance, these trailers will last four generations and can actually be passed down, in a family.
Sure.
We have a 1968 Airstream in our shop right now that we're doing some work on, but it is completely roadworthy. It is completely ready to go. And the vintage Airstream Club has trailers that date back as early as the 40s that are still in use and still on the road today.
That's great. Bradley Eubanks, our guest from Bill Thomas Camper Sales out in Wentzville. You know, just for a moment, before we get back into what all is going to be at the show, because I went last year and I want to talk to you about that a little bit. What's your reaction to the explosion in interest in camping? I mean, honestly, and I know COVID played somewhat of a role in that, but my wife and I traveled to Glacier National Park twice over the last couple of years, and it is so crowded now that you've got to plan 6 months out to the day before you want to camp to even have a chance of getting a campsite at some of these places. I mean, it is amazing how many people are out there enjoying RVing now.
Yeah, no, it's really terrific, and yeah, one of the downsides, if you will, of the explosion in popularity in the industry is, in some cases it is a truly a lack of campsites, but I think more acute is the most popular destinations do get booked up and sold out well in advance, but I think one of the things that that has really helped our industry is just the industry itself has never stopped innovating and is using better materials, producing a higher quality product, more appealing to a broader scope of the public. And as a result, when people, I think many people think of the old days and what RVs used to be, and then they're very surprised when they get in one.
Yeah.
And in first timers, the most common expression is something along the lines of, I had no idea that, these things were this nice, that they had this much space or these many features and all of the wonderful things that the product has to offer.
Well, to Mark's point about, you know, destinations, the great thing about this show is even if you own your RV, you have no ideas that you want to, you know, switch out, upgrade or anything. At the show, there will be a lot of campsite representation, tourism bureaus that'll be on site. Let's talk about some of those, if you can, about some of the destinations people can learn about when they go out to the show.
Yeah, well, and I think one of the things, you know, that when people are contemplating an RV, they often think of national parks. Most of our customers, though, stay within Missouri for most of their camping. And I think once people start to research and get acquainted with all of the destinations and resources in the state, you realize you don't have to go, you know, within 100 miles. There's dozens of places to go. My wife and I camped last fall down in the Acadia Valley, which was about 2 hours from here. And you know, it was unknown to us and absolutely beautiful. And I would go back, you know, in a heartbeat. And so to your point, yes, there will be a number of campgrounds at the show promoting, you know, what they have to offer at their place. And again, many of these places are within in an hour or two, or certainly within 100 miles of St. Louis.
Yeah, sounds great. We're talking about the St. Louis RV and Travel Show coming up February 23rd to the 25th at America Center. Went down there last year. I have to tell you, Bradley, my wife and I bought a small camper a couple years ago, immediately realized it was too small. We upgraded. We got a 30-foot pull trailer now. And ultimately, we'd like to have a fifth wheel. So we went down there last year. We get to walking around, and boy, was that my mistake, taking my wife down there. She sees this four-season fifth wheel. I don't even remember the brand, but right where the pantry would be, right next to the kitchen, there was a door you could open, and there was a separate room in there that she's decided she could turn into an office. So she's now got her mind set on this fifth wheel. Ooh. And man, I'm just telling you, if you just want to dream a little bit, it is a great place to go see what the possibilities are.
Or it could be a mobile recording studio, and you could write off the RV. You're
there
welcome.
There you go. Thank you.
Always thinking.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and really and truly, you know, one of the things that we've seen in recent years are people using RVs in ways that we never imagined. So there's a model called the toy hauler, because it has a garage in the back.
Right.
And very often these garages they're intended for toys like motorcycles and side-by-sides and stuff. But very often they get used for something, you know, completely different, where artists use them as an art studio and on and on and on. And again, in ways that people would have never dreamed.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, I know people are excited about the show and honored to be a part of the promotion of the show as well with the St. Louis RV Travel Show, February 23rd and 25th. You'll be hearing my voice promoted because I've been working with Wildman Agency. They're a great crew that promotes it and has been part of the STL RV group for a long time. But Bradley, really a pleasure to talk to you. By the way, if you got a deal on one of those teeny tiny Airstreams, that's the one my wife wants. I could probably pull it with her VW Beetle. Those things are cool. But Bradley, thank you so much for joining us.
Of course. Thank you.
All right. Good. Maybe we'll run into him down there.
Yeah. And you can get your tickets online at stlrv.com to get down to the show. So you can just go on down
and you'll hear
upgrade
Bo Matthews' big booming voice this weekend only at the America Center.
Hey, it's a gig, brother.
It's a gig, brother. Good for you. That's great. Coming up, you know, if you're into this, you can be into the shooting sports, maybe enjoy going out every once in a while and shooting. If you've never considered competitive shooting, we're going to have an expert on here from the International Defensive Pistol Association. If you've not heard of it, you're going to be enlightened. If you have, we'll have a lot of details on ways to get involved here locally. Coming up on Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors.
Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors. This segment is proudly brought to you by Razorback Armory. If you have never shot a firearm with a suppressor, it is time to get educated. And Razorback Armory is your silencer headquarters. Stop in and talk to Jesse and Brad and the crew there. They can get the whole process started. You can purchase one. They've got one for dang near every caliber that's out there. Check them out at RazorbackArmory.com. But they're on Manchester Road, just east of 270. You are going to love the experience. Okay, so we talk about training all the time on this show. Cleaning your weapon, training your weapon to make sure that is it can be as close to second nature as possible. And Mark, I'm super excited about this guest.
Sometimes, Bo Matthews, you got to put it on the line, right? You know what I'm saying? You've been in your basement. You've been practicing with Mantis X. You're telling me how good you are these days. I'm going to challenge you to go to an IDPA competition and tell me how you're doing then. So if you're not familiar with that, it is the International Defensive Pistol Association. They hold matches at I know at the Range St. Louis West. I've been involved in one there in the past, and we've got Jason Brown on the phone with us right now. We're not talking about that, Bo. I've got Jason Brown on the phone with us right now from IDPA, and Jason, thanks for giving us some time today.
Gentlemen, it's great to be here. Thanks for taking the time with me.
Yes, sir. So, you know, I was telling Bo there a minute ago, the folks at the range had some sort of a promotion a while back. So they had me come out and go through the course and shoot. And then everybody else's challenge was to come and beat me, which it ended up, I surprisingly did better than I expected, Bo. I don't remember what my actual score was. But it was a lot of fun, and it was my first experience with IDPA. So, Jason, tell people a little bit about the organization and kind of maybe how it got started and how far it's come today.
Sure, I'd be glad to. So IDPA started in late 90s. The thinking behind it started a little earlier than that, but the idea was to wrap some sort of easy way for people with their concealed carry gear to enter into a shooting competition with a very low barrier of entry. Most shooting competitions have fairly expensive requirements to be competitive, but in IDPA, the idea was just getting people out with their concealed carry gear and giving them an opportunity to exercise and prove that their gear is the kind of gear that they want for that kind of activity, or for shooting under pressure and being able to perform on demand.
Yeah. Go ahead. You say concealed carry. One of the classes I was in, I mean, those weren't necessarily concealed carry size guns, so I'm assuming that's been part of the transformation?
Well, sure. Certainly the game has become, and it's been influenced by other sports as well, and the market in general. So you have, one of the core tenets was not just to have concealed carry citizens be able to practice with their gear, but also to have military and law enforcement people be able to prove their gear in a similar competition. And it's just an idea. The idea is to get people who rely on a firearm, even if it's only the worst day of their lives, to be able to know how they might be able to perform, under that pressure, a simulated pressure. Granted, a sport is nothing like the real thing, but it's hard to generate any degree of stress on a static range with a target that's just hanging 10 yards down the road. It's hard to be able to generate the same kind of pressure there that you might experience if you needed the firearm, whether it be an exhaustive training class like the ones the range offers, but also in a real life scenario.
Jason Brown is our guest from the IDPA, and I'll be honest with you. Years and years ago, I went to a paintball range in East St. Louis. It was like in an old stockyard, and they had loud music going and strobe lights and obstacles and stuff like that. And just as in paintball world, your adrenaline is fired up. And then a few years back, I did laser tag, and your adrenaline is fired up. So is that the experience that you get at these events that you host around the country?
Absolutely. What you'll find is, as soon as somebody puts some metric of, a timer for you to begin, or, a visual cue for you to begin shooting, and some timer that'll assess your performance, nerves creep in on everyone. I've been doing this for a little over 10 years, and depending on, the level of match, I'll still have the palm sweats and the butterflies in the stomach. It's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
But it's a great experience to do that. I mean, you don't really get that chance anywhere else. Competition is unique in that, shooting competitions is pretty unique in that way.
Now here's how I remember it. And Jason, please correct me if I'm wrong, Bo, but this is a timed event. But you can get time added to your score, so you'll move around and shoot at targets, maybe man-sized targets with a headshot or a chest shot. And if you don't get both shots within a certain circle, then you get time taken off. Isn't that how it works, Jason?
Yeah, we call it time plus scoring, and yes. So your raw time is obviously the most important metric there. But any inaccuracies you present during the course of fire, or like any other game, it has rules. So if you were to find yourself, you know, coming in conflict with those rules, those add time to your performance as well. Now, it stands in contrast to some of the other shooting sports that are very popular, specifically handgun shooting sports like the USPSA, which is the United States Practical Shooters Association, and the international version of that, which is called IPSC. Those are more speed-oriented. IDPA focuses a lot more on accuracy. So inaccuracy can be kind of expensive.
Yes.
It pays to practice.
It does. And, you know, on this show that we talk every week, I always, you know, want to encourage people to train and to clean the gun, you know, repetitively, so it's like second nature to them. And what it comes down to is muscle memory in a lot of cases, and you don't have that opportunity. Law enforcement goes through certain training. They even have, you know, video programs that they can do where it's interactive and, you know, you're actually, you know, getting that stress level up. But a sheriff, Sheriff Marshak, actually, Jeffco, said when it's going down, you actually resort back to your most basic training, and that's what's so necessary. And it takes me back to, it reminds me of the mass shooting that occurred at Greenwood Park Mall in Indiana a couple of years ago, where they actually created a test, like what this guy shot at. I forget the yardage of it. Was it like, 75 yards? Or
wasn't that far. Wasn't it like 30?
I think 40 was 40 the longest
yards?
Shot.
Yeah.
I think 40 was the generally appreciated to be the longest shot. Still, though, that's...
With a handgun.
From a pistol, that's insane. I mean, I don't know if you've ever looked at what a 18-inch wide target looks like at 40 yards over the top of some iron sights. It can be pretty intimidating. And I think the drill was in good spirit, and I've done it myself with, you know, varied results. But in an interview with Eli, he, I think he goes by Eli, it might be Elijah, I can't really remember.
Elijah, yeah.
Yeah, he said that it was a little bit different in real life. He did brace himself against a column or something in the mall for the longer shots. The drill doesn't give you that opportunity, but it's hard to put a column everywhere you go. So, it's a really challenging drill. And it puts you in a mindset of what would you do if you had to take a shot that long when most ranges don't go past 25 yards?
It's a good point. Yeah. IDPA.com is the website if people want to go find out more. So, Jason, tell us about the competitions itself. People might be intimidated and think they're walking into a room with, you know, the best shooters in town, but you can join this at your own skill level, right? So if you're new to it, you start at novice and work your way up.
Absolutely. The primary focus of this was creating an easy on-ramp for novice shooters or new shooters who are just now getting into the self-defense mindset, whether it be carrying it every day, a home defense firearm, whatever the case may be. It allows, based on your equipment and based on your skill level, competition against like-skilled people. There are absolute professionals that compete at a very high level in the sport, just like you find in any sport. But at the same time...
Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors. This segment is proudly brought to you by Razorback Armory. If you have never shot a firearm with a suppressor, It is time to get educated. The Razorback Armory is your silencer headquarters. Stop in and talk to Jesse and Brad and the crew there. They can get the whole process started. You can purchase one. They've got one for dang near every caliber that's out there. Check them out at RazorbackArmory.com. But they're on Manchester Road, just east of 270. You are going to love the experience. Okay, so we talk about training all the time on this show, cleaning your weapon, training your weapon to make sure that is it can be as close to second nature as possible. And Mark, I'm super excited about this guest.
Sometimes, Bo Matthews, you got to put it on the line, right? You know what I'm saying? You've been in your basement. You've been practicing with Mantis X. You're telling me how good you are these days. I'm going to challenge you to go to an IDPA competition and tell me
Can't
how you're
wait.
Doing then. So if you're not
Can't
familiar
wait.
With that, it is the International Defensive Pistol Association. They hold matches at I know at the Range St. Louis West. I've been involved in one there in the past, and we've got Jason Brown on the phone with us right now. We're not talking about that, Bo. I've got Jason Brown on the phone with us right now from IDPA. And Jason, thanks for giving us some time today.
Gentlemen, it's great to be here. Thanks for taking the time with me.
Yes, sir. So, you know, I was telling Bo there a minute ago, the folks at the range had some sort of a promotion a while back. So they had me come out and go through the course and shoot. And then everybody else's challenge was to come and beat me, which it ended up, I surprisingly did better than I expected, Bo. I don't remember what my actual score was. But it was a lot of fun, and it was my first experience with IDPA. So, Jason, tell people a little bit about the organization and kind of maybe how it got started and how far it's come today.
Sure, I'd be glad to. So IDPA started in late 90s. The thinking behind it started a little earlier than that, but the idea was to wrap some sort of easy way for people with their concealed carry gear to enter into a shooting competition with a very low barrier of entry. Most shooting competitions have fairly expensive requirements to be competitive. But in IDPA, the idea was just getting people out with their concealed carry gear and giving them an opportunity to exercise and prove that their gear is the kind of gear that they want for that kind of activity, or for shooting under pressure and being able to perform on demand.
Yeah. Go ahead. You say concealed carry. One of the classes I was in, I mean, those weren't necessarily concealed carry size guns, so I'm assuming that's been part of the transformation?
Well, sure. Certainly the game has become, and it's been influenced by other sports as well, yeah, and the market in general. So you have, one of the core tenets was not just to have concealed carry citizens be able to practice with their gear, but also to have military and law enforcement people be able to prove their gear in a similar competition. And it's just an idea. The idea is to get people who rely on a firearm, even if it's only the worst day of their lives, to be able to know how they might be able to perform, under that pressure, a simulated pressure. Granted, a sport is nothing like the real thing,
right,
but it's hard to generate any degree of stress on a static range with a target that's just hanging 10 yards down the road. It's hard to be able to generate the same kind of pressure there that you might experience if you needed the firearm, whether it be an exhaustive training class like the ones the range offers, but also in a real life scenario.
Jason Brown is our guest from the IDPA, and I'll be honest with you. Years and years ago, I went to a paintball range in East St. Louis. It was like in an old stockyard, and they had loud music going and strobe lights and obstacles and stuff like that. And just as in paintball world, your adrenaline is fired up. And then a few years back, I did laser tag, and your adrenaline is fired up. So is that the experience that you get at these events that you host around the country?
Absolutely. What you'll find is, as soon as somebody puts some metric of, a timer for you to begin, or, a visual cue for you to begin shooting, and some timer that'll assess your performance, nerves creep in on everyone. I've been doing this for a little over 10 years, and depending on, the level of match, I'll still have the palm sweats and the butterflies in the stomach. It's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
But it's a great experience to do that. I mean, you don't really get that chance anywhere else. Competition is unique in that. Shooting competitions is pretty unique in that way.
Now here's how I remember it. And Jason, please correct me if I'm wrong, Bo, but this is a timed event. But you can get time added to your score, so you'll move around and shoot at targets, maybe man-sized targets with a head shot or a chest shot. And if you don't get both shots within a certain circle, then you get time taken off. Isn't that how it works, Jason?
Yeah, we call it time plus scoring, and yes. So your raw time is obviously the most important metric there. But any inaccuracies you present during the course of fire, or like any other game, it has rules. So if you were to find yourself, you know, coming in conflict with those rules, those add time to your performance as well. Now, it stands in contrast to some of the other shooting sports that are very popular, specifically handgun shooting sports like the USPSA, which is the United States Practical Shooters Association, and the international version of that, which is called IPSC. Those are more speed-oriented. IDPA focuses a lot more on accuracy, so inaccuracy can be kind of expensive.
Yes.
It pays to practice.
It does. And, you know, on this show that we talk every week, I always, you know, want to encourage people to train and to clean the gun, you know, repetitively, so it's like second nature to them. And what it comes down to is muscle memory in a lot of cases, and you don't have that opportunity. Law enforcement goes through certain training. They even have, you know, video programs that they can do where it's interactive and, you know, you're actually, you know, getting that stress level up. But a sheriff, Sheriff Marshak, actually, Jeffco, said when it's going down, you actually resort back to your most basic training, and that's what's so necessary. And it takes me back to, it reminds me of the mass shooting that occurred at Greenwood Park Mall in Indiana a couple of years ago, where they actually created a test, like what this guy shot at. I forget the yardage of it. Was it like, 75 yards? Or
wasn't that far. Wasn't like 30,
I think 40 was 40 the longest
yards?
Shot.
Yeah.
I think 40 was the generally appreciated to be the longest shot. Still, though, that's
with a handgun,
from a pistol. That's insane. I mean, I don't know if you've ever looked at what a 18 inch wide target looks like at 40 yards over the top of some iron sights. It can be pretty intimidating. And I think the drill was in good spirit, and I've done it myself with, you know, varied results. But in an interview with Eli, I think he goes by Eli. It might be Elijah. I can't really remember.
Elijah, yeah.
Yeah, he said that it was a little bit different in real life. He did brace himself against a, you know, a column or something in the mall for the longer shots. The drill doesn't give you that opportunity, but it's hard to put a column everywhere you go. So, it's a really challenging drill. It puts you in a mindset of what would you do if you had to take a shot that long when most ranges don't go past 25 yards.
It's a good point. Yeah. IDPA.com is the website if people want to go find out more. So, Jason, tell us about the competitions itself. People might be intimidated and think they're walking into a room with, you know, the best shooters in town, but you can join this at your own skill level, right? So if you're new to it, you start at novice and work your way up.
Absolutely. The primary focus of this was creating an easy on-ramp for novice shooters or new shooters who are just now getting into the self-defense mindset, whether it be carrying it every day, a home defense firearm, whatever the case may be. It allows, based on your equipment and based on your skill level, competition against like skilled people. There are absolute professionals that compete at a very high level in the sport, just like you find in any sport. But at the same time, their local match will be filled with people who are eager to help you out in any way, shape, or form that you require, and you'll have competition right out the gate.
I think it's so important because it's one of the few sports that could actually save your life. You can get into it for the sport of it, but, you know, down the road, you could possibly save your life or protect those loved ones around you. Now, Mark is a golfer, and so he could use his driver as a weapon, I'm sure, but
no.
There's still not a lot of sports out there that's going to save your life.
I'm not very good with that either. I'll just have to say.
It depends, I think, also on how accurate you are with the ball at range, right? Unless you're 3 feet away, things could be a little bit
So what's your advice, Jason, for people who might be interested in this? You want to find a local club, I would assume, and ask a few questions. What's your advice on that?
Yeah, so in our local area, you know, we have several great clubs with a lot of different pools of people to compete with. And it's a great experience. Everybody's been nice. It's one of the things that distinguishes this sport, I think, from a lot of others, is how welcoming we are to newer people. That said, we have locally, we have gatewayidpa.com, which is just sort of a collection of resources that we're putting together for people, no matter where you are within this greater St. Louis metropolitan area, to find a local club that will help you and get a sense of their schedule as well. Yeah. There's usually 6 events per month, so there's really no reason not to go out and watch one. And again, spectators are welcome at every single match I've ever been to. So my advice would be, if you have a firearm, you have a few serviceable magazines, whether or not you have a holster to carry it in, most clubs will make accommodation for you to be able to shoot, even from the low ready, if you are uncomfortable or inexperienced drawing a loaded firearm.
Yeah, that's good. And, you know, like, my introduction to it happened to be at the Range St. Louis West, which is where I go all the time. And if you go to their website, you can see when upcoming IDPA matches are scheduled. So if the Range isn't where you go, which I'd highly recommend, you can probably check your own local place wherever you go, and they're probably hosting these matches.
Absolutely, especially if, you know, for in St. Louis anyway, we have the Range St. Louis West in Baldwin. STL Sharpshooters just started their IDPA matches as well. Ooh, so nice. We have indoor options if the weather is intimidating. Now, I'll recommend, of course, that you shoot in bad weather, because not all bad things happen on sunny days. But right. Getting used to how your gear works in the rain is a good thing, or cold, whatever. Sometimes our hands are different. But I think it's, you know, there's a lot of great opportunities in IDPA to get comfortable as a civilian. You know, most of the military and police have training budgets that we can't match independently as, you know, as citizens. And so they get the opportunity to do these things. IDPA is really the easiest, least expensive way for a concerned citizen to get good at using their self-defense tools.
It's so important. And I'll tell you what, when I first saw the show sheet from Carl, our producer, I thought we were going to be talking to a microbrewery. I thought we were talking IPA.
Oh,
that's not what we're talking about
afterwards.
At all.
That's afterwards.
That's March weekend.
Not before.
But I will tell you, you guys have produced a ton of videos on YouTube. So that's where I did my homework to prepare for this conversation. I encourage anybody that's listening to this conversation, is intrigued. Seriously, you can go buy a gun, but unless you train with it, and unless you train in a situation like this, it's a paperweight, or it could be deadly to you. So you really need to do the right thing and up your level of training with the IDPA for sure.
Yeah. Again, Jason, gatewayidpa.com. Is that what you said?
Yeah, that's our local. That's a local site that we're building up to, you know, encourage participation in the greater metropolitan area.
Excellent. Well,
we have clubs in Illinois. We have clubs in, you know, Missouri, all over. There's a lot of great shooting to be done in this area.
Sounds like a fantastic organization. Jason Brown, we appreciate your time this morning, my friend. Thank you.
Yeah, buddy.
Thank you so much, gentlemen.
Yep.
Hope you have a great day.
Yeah, you too. We'll see you on the range. How about that?
Absolutely.
All right. Very good. Appreciate that. So
I want to meet you for that.
Oh, yeah. I think it'd be a good time. So here's the thing. Really, it's for anybody at any skill level. It's also for whatever type of weapon you prefer to carry. They've got a division for revolvers. They've got a division for the carry optics. If you've got your gun set up with optics, they've got one for just service pistols, custom defense pistols, compact carry. I mean, anything you prefer to shoot, they've got it in there. So,
dude, I've got so many people in my head that probably have never heard of this, and I really want to. I'm going to be sending their website out to so many people because I'm just learning of this organization. And ironically, there's no organization that's the International Assault Pistol Association.
No,
so that doesn't
that
exist.
Of course not.
It's about defense. It's about defense, dang it.
Yes, indeed. Just okay. Like our show.
Are we done?
That's right. We're done. That does it for
Yay.
Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors. Have a great weekend.
See you, boys.
Get more at 971talk.com.